Today's program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA, the nation's largest distributor of heritage breed pigs and turkeys. For more information, visit heritagefoodsusa.com.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Good morning and welcome to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, Executive Vice President of the James Beard Foundation, and every Wednesday at 11 o'clock and sometimes at other times, whether you're listening to the podcast or to the archive at heritageradionetwork.org, we have a conversation about taste, one of the aspects of food I think that is sometimes left out of the larger conversations about our food system, about gastronomy, about the importance of choosing healthful, environmentally friendly foods. Taste, I think, permeates all of those conversations. And the thing that I like about taste is it's a window into so many different aspects of food and so many different aspects of culture and so many different cultures. And today, we are fortunate to have in the studio with us, the Sunny Studio today, here in Bushwick, Brooklyn at Roberta's, Diane Cochiles, one of the world's experts, certainly the American expert on Greek cuisine. Welcome for joining us.
Well, kalimera, as we say in Greek.
Kalimera.
Good morning.
Indeed, good morning. It's so great to have you here. We've known each other a long time, and in that time, I think you've probably seen America's understanding of the foods of your part of the world change pretty drastically, I would imagine, due in large part, I think, to your work. We're fortunate to have a new book from you that is really ostensibly the reason for us to have this conversation now, The Country Cooking of Greece. But tell me a little bit about what you think about Greek food in America.
Well, I think what's happening now is... Well, first of all, the Mediterranean diet news was, I think, great news for Greek cuisine.
Sure. So let's explain that, the recent study.
The recent study, the clinical trials, mm-hmm. basically finally proved that this diet really does reduce heart disease.
Right. And by Mediterranean diet, with a capital M and a capital D, we're talking about a specific body of work that actually began in Greece on the island of Crete.
It did begin in Greece. Yeah. It began on the island of Crete. And the Greek diet is the original Mediterranean diet, right? The mother
she says,
of all Mediterranean
because,
diets.
Right.
And I think what sets Greek cuisine apart from other cuisines in the Mediterranean, and taste definitely plays into this, Greek cuisine combines two seemingly disparate qualities. One is the quality of the indulgent aspect of mm-hmm. it. Greeks love to eat. We love to sit around a table. We love all the social implications of a mm-hmm. meal.
Which I think have an impact on the healthful implications of a meal.
It does have an impact, especially on sort of the emotional mm-hmm. Healthfulness of the meal. But there's another whole other aspect, which is, for the most part, the traditional food is really good for you. It's very healthy. Mm. We have, I think Greek cuisine can honestly boast the greatest variety of plant-based main courses, perhaps of all cuisines in the Mediterranean.
What are some of those?
I'm sorry?
Could you name some of those?
Sure. We would have, there's a vast array of really delicious bean dishes. Mm-hmm. that we would eat as main courses. There is a wonderful, the Greek giant beans. Mm-hmm. We do one of my favorite recipes, and actually we serve it at Pilos in New York, is a giant bean dish baked with honey and tomato and dill. And that can be served either usually served as an appetizer in the restaurant, as a mezze, but in a Greek home, that would be dinner. Hmm. Certainly in my Greek home, that's
right.
Dinner. There's a huge array. I mean, spinach and rice pilaf is a main course for a Greek.
And these not side dishes, which they could be construed as in other cuisines, perhaps, but main courses.
I think that's one of the main points here, that these types of dishes in a traditional Greek setting, and especially in a home setting, these are main courses. This is something, I cook spinach and rice for dinner, and I serve it with a little bit of feta cheese, a little bit of raw olive oil on top. And
everyone is coming over, I think. I just heard all of our listeners ask what time.
And it's delicious. In a restaurant setting, that changes a little bit. We would typically serve that as a, we'd serve that as a bed for something else. More typically, a piece of fish.
So we should back up and say, in addition to being a great author and expert and journalist about food, both here and in Greece, which I think is a unique situation for some of the Americans abroad who have become experts of various cuisines, you are also the chef, the consulting chef at two great restaurants here in New York. So we can enjoy the fruits of your labor literally at Pilos in the East Village and also in the East Village Boukias.
At Boukias in the East on 2nd and 2nd,
So again, okay. About the restaurant eating,
Well, the restaurant eating in the United States has really, it's just gone, it's traveled leaps and bounds since I was a kid in New York, when we used to eat at, all the places on 9th Avenue with the open kitchens and the steam table, Greek cuisine sort of.
Or, if, God forbid, the diner where there was always moussaka and spanakopita on the menu.
Yeah, the diners, I always have fond memories. Uh-huh. Having been, I'm a Greek kid who grew up in Queens, so I have very fond memories of diners as a teenager.
Of course.
But
I'm not a Greek kid who grew up in Queens, and I have fond memories of those diners as a teenager.
Those were our first dining out experiences.
Right, of course.
For better or worse. But for the most part, you had some pretty good food in Greek diners. What's happened, I think, in the United States in the last, say, 10 or 15 years, I mean, it started with certain, I think, key restaurants. In New York City, the first restaurant to really open the floodgates was Perialy.
Mm-hmm.
Then there was Milos.
Street, or where was it?
I'm sorry?
On 21st Street? Where was Perialy?
I think it's 20. It's
Flatiron, right in the Flatiron.
Yeah, it's in the Flatiron,
right
Flatiron district,
offices,
20th
yeah.
maybe. Right. And then Milos definitely raised the bar.
Uh-huh.
Then there was, Molivos. And again, I mean, just now there's a great wealth of very good Greek restaurants in Manhattan. And we see that, I think, spreading out. But I think what's happening in the way that Greek food is communicated to a broader American audience, it's also happening in different parts of the food industry.
Mm.
Greek yogurt is probably
right. It's the
most
savior
obvious
of the entire American dairy industry,
right.
Apparently.
Changed
on who
the entire
look.
Dairy
yeah.
industry.
Right. And what is, while we're there, we're just going to jump around to things. What is Greek yogurt? I mean, what do they mean? Obviously, this yogurt made in upstate New York is not made in Greece, for starters, although it has a name that's hard to pronounce. But what does it mean when they say Greek yogurt?
Well, that's an issue because there's the nomenclature's confusing. There is no real definition of Greek yogurt beyond the fact that it's thick. How you achieve that thickness is up to the
producer.
Up to the ethics of every quote-unquote Greek yogurt
and
producer
how is
in
it
this country.
Traditionally achieved.
Traditionally, it's strained, and that's what people need to look for. It has to be strained. And that's what basically happens is you're straining out the whey, and what's left is this incredibly dense, creamy, protein-rich, sour. It's real Greek yogurt is sour.
That's what's
it's
missing about the Greek yogurt here. It tastes like vanilla pudding almost.
It's a bit insipid, but I think that's
that's
to appeal to the sort of what people perceive as the American palate. Sour is a hard sell in the United States.
Most yogurt has lost the sour. Even when I go home to Canada, where I grew up, the yogurt is more Balkan style, like yogurty in your face.
But I think what's happening, unfortunately, now is everyone and his mother is making Greek yogurt. Right?
Yes.
And
a few fathers.
And their father. And what they're doing, for the most part, is not straining the yogurt, but adding things to the yogurt to thicken it. It's just, I'm not saying, it's not the authentic.
Okay.
It's not quite the same.
But it is a step in the right direction, I would say, compared to some of the insipid and chemical-packed things that we've had in the past,
absolutely.
Yogurt-wise. Yeah.
Absolutely.
And also is helping an industry that needs some help, in fact.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's, what's great about these products is that, I have to say I was flabbergasted on a recent trip through a supermarket in Jackson Heights, Queens, and I was buying cereal for my son, and I happened to notice that there were a couple of the major cereal brands. I don't remember which one it was, but I was walking down the aisle and I see sort of Greek yogurt, and then in small letters, the cereal brand. And I'm thinking this is really
funny. Yeah,
it's everywhere now. Yeah. But I think what's happening, and this is a good thing, it's replacing a lot of the fattier, it's replacing mayonnaise, for example, in a lot of applications. It's also opened the door, I think, and I see this in my own work, it's opened the door to a greater interest in other healthful aspects of Greek cuisine. Mm. But one of the things that I'm doing, I have to say I'm very proud of this, I'm working with some of the, probably, you know, the two or three top universities in the United States with their food service, their dining services, basically helping to get healthier, mainly plant-based Greek menu items into their student dining facilities.
Wow.
And that is, you know, that shows that there is an interest at a very visceral level. It's not sexy to do that. It's not a fancy restaurant. It's,
right.
It's feeding.
Contract feeding, yeah.
It's also, actually, in these cases, it's not contract feeding. They're in-house.
Okay.
They're in-house facilities, but...
Which is why they can hire an expert such as you,
I guess,
think.
That's yeah. true. I mean, I'm working with Yale, I'm working with Harvard, I'm working with UMass Amherst. So, there, I mean...
Oh, a few sort of fly-by-night institutions.
A few fly-by-night yeah. institutions,
Let me remind listeners that if you have questions about Greek yogurt or anything really related to Greece, or even perhaps university feeding, you can call us at 718-497-2128. If you prefer to email us, the address is info@heritageradionetwork.org. Or maybe you prefer to tweet, and you can do that with your questions at Taste Matters HRN, as long as you can get them down to 140 characters. Well, actually, even less if you include the Twitter handle. Tell me, your recent book, The Country Cooking of Greece, I think focuses on an aspect that we don't often imagine, perhaps because of our ignorance, but that there are actually more than one Greek cuisines, let's say, that there is a regionality to the food, just as there is in Italy, or there is in France, or even China for that matter, but also that perhaps there is a more rustic country cooking and a more sophisticated urban cooking. Could you explain a little bit about both the regionality and those two different types of cuisine?
Sure. Greece is a small country. Much smaller than France, for example.
Okay.
But nonetheless, its geography dictates that regionality. I mean, it stands to reason that there's a regional cuisine because it's a very mountainous country. So, and it's also a country that has one of the longest coastlines and, you know, several thousand islands. Each of those islands has... I wouldn't stretch it to say that each of those islands has a unique cuisine, but certainly unique dishes.
Mm-hmm.
Place-specific dishes. On the mainland, up until really the 70s, getting from place to place was not always easy. So you have these enclaves that remain pretty isolated. And I think that is one of the reasons why the regional cuisine has managed to stay intact. So there's definitely a cuisine from, you know, so there's a Macedonian cuisine from the northern part of the country, which is a complex cuisine because it's both urban and rustic. That part of Greece saw an influx of urban Greeks from Turkey in 1922, and they brought with them a very sophisticated cuisine. Things that we take for granted, the poster boys of Greek food, moussaka, came with those Greeks.
Oh.
Saganaki, you know, another Greek restaurant classic, right, the fried cheese, came with those Greeks. And kind of insinuated themselves into the general cuisine of Greece and have traveled. You know, those dishes have traveled. There's definitely a very whole cuisine on the island of Crete. In general terms, I would say that there's a mountain cuisine, kind of a mainland mountain cuisine, and an island cuisine. So there's a shepherd's cuisine and kind of a simpler, more pared down, you know, maybe not a fisherman's cuisine per se, but definitely cuisine that evolved in places that were, you know, always had a dearth of raw ingredients. There's also a tremendous amount of wild food in Greece, and I think that's something that many people don't realize. So that's, I think, you know, that kind of sums up the regionality in a nutshell. But there is also a distinction between rural and, you know, sort of rural cuisine and more urban cooking. In the last 10 or 15 years in Athens, the urban cuisine has really just catapulted. It's really evolved. When I first moved to Greece in the early 90s, and certainly as a child going there in the summers, there were really no chefs. I mean, you became a cook because it was the only thing you could do. You were poor and you ended up in a kitchen. Or oftentimes you ended up on boats in a galley.
Interesting.
and came back and, you know.
So there's a compact cuisine.
There's a compact cuisine.
I'm going to interrupt you for a second because we need to take a brief break. And when we get back, we'll continue this conversation.
Okay.
We'll talk about urban and rural and agriculture and the economy, I hope, a little bit. You're listening to Taste Matters. I'm talking to Diane Kochilis, an expert on Greek cuisine.
Today's break song is called Intrigue by Obesity. You're listening to Taste Matters on heritageradionetwork.org. This program has been brought to you by Heritage Foods USA. Heritage Foods USA exists to promote genetic diversity, small family farms, and a fully traceable food supply. We're committed to making wholesome, delicious, and sustainably produced heritage foods available to all Americans. In doing so, we will foster the link between sustainable land use, small-scale food production, and preservation of the foods of past generations for future generations. For more information and to order today, visit www.heritagefoodsusa.com.
Welcome back to Taste Matters. I'm your host, Mitchell Davis, and I'm talking with Diane Kochilis, who divides her time between Greece and America. And we were talking about the distinction between rural and urban, and maybe we'll just finish that conversation and then get into some other fun things.
Okay, well, I just, in a nutshell, again, what happened in urban areas in Greece in the last 10 years, basically after the Olympics, like right before the Olympics and up until the crisis, right? Mm-hmm. You were finding things in restaurants that were completely over the top, like, you know, foamed moussaka and, you know, Greek salad in, you know, jello cubes.
Oh, may Eboli rest in peace.
It was pretty crazy. The worst was freeze-dried feta. That was, I think, the epitome of bad taste, in my humble opinion. But you know, people have gone back and are definitely in search of something more grounded and, you know, rooted in tradition. That's not to say that it doesn't evolve and it's not beautifully presented and you still have a sense of aesthetics when you eat. But it's gone from sort of craziness to...
Right. I imagine that part of the regionality also impacts the agriculture the way it does in Italy, that because of these unique isolated areas that certain plants grow, you mentioned the importance of wild plants, that there are generations of wheats and various ingredients that actually also impact the cuisine to some extent, what's grown, the ingredients.
Absolutely. The lay of the land plays, I guess, the most basic role in what in what people eat,
right.
And certainly that's the case in Greece. Mm-hmm. And the, you know, one area that exists in every part of the country, one thing that exists in every part of the country are the wild greens. And what we count as wild greens also include a great variety of herbs. For example, where I come from, my family's from Ikaria, the island where people forget to die. A couple of years ago, right around, we were there for Easter, and I sort of tried. I did an experiment. I didn't want to buy food for a few days, and I basically lived off of what was growing wild in my garden. We hadn't weeded it yet. We hadn't planted it yet. It was just what was there from the winter. And I counted, 40 edible greens, and we found mushrooms. We just found all sorts of things that we could eat.
Wow. And isn't that funny? Because we've gone from the foams, which are sort of iconic of the last big global food movement, to foraged food, which is the current global food movement
right.
We're in. But this is part of the traditions going back to the beginning of time,
I
imagine.
To the beginning of time, yeah.
What always amazes me is that people have lived in Greece for so many thousands of years, just like in Italy, and things still continue to push out of the earth. It's just amazing. When I think about that, it's kind of crazy.
It is amazing, isn't it? I mean, I think that's also one of the great sort of like the wisdom points of the Mediterranean diet, that a lot of the foods that we're eating today, we've been eating basically continuously for several thousand years. I mean, olive oil, olives, honey,
right.
Certain nuts, certain pulses, lentils, chickpeas, split peas, all of those things have been part of our diet for eons.
Which is exactly why when I'm sitting next to someone who won't eat wheat or for whatever reason, or bananas were sort of shunned for a long time when people were following glycemic diets, it just makes me crazy because something couldn't have changed just yesterday, I don't think, after thousands of years. So I understand that in addition to the fame that you have in America as your expertise, that you also enjoy a certain fame in Greece because of a TV show that you are the star of. And I love the name, although I won't. You'll have to say it in Greek for me.
I will.
But it's, what are we going to eat today? Mom is the name of your show. And so basically you are every Greek person's mother.
I'm everyone's Greek mother. And I think that the title, I love the title because it is indicative of you know, the important place that mothers have in Greek society,
right?
And the power of women in that society.
So say it in Greek just so we can hear it.
Τι θα φάμε σήμερα, μαμά.
Awesome. I can't wait for that to come with subtitles to the Food Network.
And I have to say, you know, one of the great things about the show is that I'm doing totally traditional Greek food.
Isn't and that funny?
My kids come on the show. My husband has come on the show. It's just, we have a lot of fun doing it. And it's in a home kitchen.
Uh-huh.
And the Greeks have really taken, they've really embraced it because it is the complete opposite of everything that they've been fed by the media,
right,
over the last 10 right. or 15 years. I get emails all the time telling me, I made this dish, it was great, you know, I'm following your recipe for this.
Amazing.
You know, it's so simple, it's so accessible. And I think that, going back, that's what Greek food is all about. It's simple, it's delicious, it's timeless.
Uh-huh.
And it's healthy, and it's user friendly. There's an element of sharing, and I think that's its greatest charm.
So I have to ask, because you know, from the papers here, it would seem that Greece is in utter chaos. The balance of Europe weighs well now on Cyprus, but formerly on Greece. And has that had an impact? Is that part of the return to the traditional foods? I mean, both because of the economic model and restaurants perhaps have a harder time, but also because when times are tough, even here after 9/11, comfort food was the whole, every chef had to make meatloaf kind of thing.
Has absolutely happened in Greece. First of all, people's disposable income is, you know, much less than it was a few years ago.
Sure.
The whole point of the show is to produce food that is economically sort of, you know, it's cheap.
Right.
It's
you can
cheap,
feed your family.
Yeah, right. It's
right.
cheap
well
and healthy.
And cheaply, yeah.
A lot of it is plant-based. But I think that what has happened with the crisis is not only an economic crisis in Greece. To my mind, it's a social crisis, and it's a national identity crisis. I think what I'm living through there right now is a country that is searching for its own soul. Where are we, you know, in the world community? Where do we stand in relation to other countries? Mm. It's an image problem to a certain extent, but I think it's more deeper question of what's our part in the global community,
and what are some of the sides on that on those debates? Like, what are people, what are the issues that they're grappling with? Where do they feel they are? Where do they think they ought to be?
Look, I mean, just to give you an example, a generation ago, my in-laws, for example, you know, they led a comfortable middle class life. They had absolutely no debt. They lived within their means. They mm-hmm. built three homes within their means. Mm-hmm. Slowly. It wasn't something that happened overnight.
All homes seem to be built slowly in Greece, I've
that's
noticed.
True.
The
that's
construction
true.
always in progress.
That's
anyway.
True. But, you know, what happened in the next generation, this is a generation after 1980, people just bought wholeheartedly into the whole, you know, sort of going into hawk and the whole sort of consumer approach to life. Mm-hmm. And I think that it was really, to me, as a New Yorker, I mean, it was very strange. I've had experiences where I've been stopped on the street. I was once wearing a Folex, okay,
uh-huh.
and you know, bought on Canal right. Street, and stopped on the street because somebody was noticed the watch. And sort of, they were in awe of this watch,
yeah.
And it was to me as a New Yorker, where you know, you don't bat an eye at too many things.
Right.
It just is a very telling experience. I never really pay attention to that sort of thing. But people, you'd see secretaries earning, you know, 500, 600 euros a month, but they managed to have a pair of Ferragamo shoes on. Hmm. They weren't fakes. They were the real thing. So there was something gone awry. Something had gone awry in the financial system if people were able to do that. And what had gone awry was that everybody just went sunk wholeheartedly into debt. But I think the social crisis is, you know, people are questioning, who are we as Greeks? You know, what does this mean? I mean, or what do we have to offer the world? Mm-hmm. From my perspective, I think the lessons of, you know, sort of the lessons of living a simpler life and enjoying and, you know, not buying into the Western system so wholeheartedly. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of wisdom in that. Mm-hmm. And I think the food is the most visceral and elemental reflection of that, because it's, if you go back to the roots, what is the food about? It's about eating in season, it's about sharing it, it's about enjoying it, it's about taking your time, it's about cooking, for one, right. Cooking basic, you know, cooking simple things, and it's about just, you know, that what I mentioned when we first started talking, just this healthfulness, but also married to an indulgence. It's a joy of life that comes from simplicity.
So with that in mind, I love that, a joy of life that comes from simplicity. Let's what are we having for dinner tonight, Mom? Like, it's dinner time, and I know myself, I sort of reach for the olive oil and I reach for the herbs and the garlic and I cook in an Italian idiom, but if I want to move and make that Greek, what does it look like? What would a typical dinner, should people at home be eating tonight to have
tonight?
A part of this indulgent and simple
Well, I'll tell
lifestyle?
You, that slowly cooked spinach rice pilaf is pretty good.
I mean,
that's the other thing. One thing about the vegetable cookery in Greece is that we tend to cook our vegetables for a very long time. And I know that's a little bit anathema to an American palate, but what happens is that the sugars in the vegetables caramelize and they become much tastier. And it's one reason why kids eat so many vegetables in Greece. Because they taste good. They're sweeter.
Yeah.
So for me, dinner tonight, if I could come to Roberto's, that would be great. Can you get me a table?
that might be harder than fixing the Greek problem.
That might
problem,
be harder
the economy,
than fixing
right.
The financial crisis, right? Dinner tonight for me, if I were cooking, would probably be something pretty simple like that spinach rice, or it would be maybe a nice bean dish, or it could be a delicious yellow split pea puree that we call fava, and I would top that maybe with maybe something a little fancier like a braised octopus, or you might even want to go out to a Greek restaurant for dinner. I can name two very good ones.
You could go to Pilos or Boukias. Or any of the others that are wonderful. Well, I think, and we are going to, after the show, go to the James Beard Foundation, where you're going to be addressing the public for our Beard on Books series. So if anyone is listening and wants to run down to 167 West 12th Street at noon, Diane will be there, and we'll be talking about more of the same things and reading passages from your book, I presume.
Yeah, I'm looking very forward to that.
Good, it should be great. Well, thank you for joining us
here. Thank you, this was fun.
good, as long as it's fun for us, I assume it's fun for people listening at home, but you never really know. Next week, we're going to have a lot of fun, I'm sure. We are welcoming Alessandro Porcelli, who is an Italian gastronome, who is the founder of an amazing group called Cook It Raw, which is a group of global chefs of the sort that probably make some foams and find some forage for some things. And they have a new book out that I think celebrates their global take on sort of the local terroir of the world. I know that sounds like a contradiction, but we'll have Alessandro here next week to explain it. In the meantime, if you don't want to go, or even if you do want to go to a Greek restaurant or you want to cook a Greek meal, eat something simple and indulgent and healthful, and maybe send your friends in Greece a few bucks, because they could use it.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.